Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello everyone and welcome along to the RTÉ GAA podcast. Week three of the championship season. Enda McGinley will be with us later on to look at all the football, but Neil McManus is with us for the first week of the hurling, which really, Neil, felt like it delivered in all of the ways that hurling fans hoped it would.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Good weather, Jackie. Big crowds coming to different venues around Munster mainly, and some smaller crowds around Leinster. But I think, you know, I was in Ennis myself yesterday. It was a carnival atmosphere. It was absolutely unbelievable, and it's so good to see those venues thronged for big games. Like obviously the Clare and Limerick game was so much anticipated for the last number of months, really. And the same down in Walsh Park for Waterford and Cork, obviously. But look, it's just great to have the championship started, and there was no better way to lift the lid on it than Clare and Limerick. And it really looked at one stage, I think about 52 or 3 minutes played, that Clare were going to, you know, run out here 10, 12 point winners, and how they managed to lose the game. I'm sure they're still figuring that out a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably the big question that hangs in their minds today, Rory, isn't it? It's just, how did we let that one get away? 9 points up in complete control, and yet somehow today Limerick are the winners.
115 to 8 points on 53 minutes, which is, you know, I was watching it and I was saying to myself, This Limerick team is done. You know, they just looked laboured. They looked tired. There was a lot of sloppy tackling, which were frees. I know the Limerick crowd were giving out about Cullum Lions, but they were frees, and it just looked lethargic, and they were just off it. Their shot selection was poor. I've never seen a Limerick team run up such a poor tally. I mean, what, 8 points in 50 minutes of hurling, and then all of a sudden just explode? But I think, look, there's no point in saying otherwise. Clare blew this. They did, like, and that's really what will rankle. Having said that, I don't think they can sit around and feel too sorry for themselves, because if you go back to this time last year, they lost their first game at home in Ennis as well to Tipperary, conceded a heap of goals in a game maybe that they probably felt that they were going to win. And they turned their season around the following week. They went out and beat Limerick. I think it'll take all of the powers of Brian Lowen to rally them now and resurrect the spirit within them, because after everything kind of going so well, and everything going so well for 50-odd minutes, then just the whole thing just went flat on them. And look, ultimately, all you could do is just doff your cap to Limerick, because they showed again, you know, even like why they are champions and how difficult they are to beat. The fact that even when not playing that well, they can still eke it out and make it difficult. The Diarmaid Byrne's goal really injected a shot of life into them, I felt. I don't know, was that a mishit, Neil? I'd be interested in your views on that. It looked like he mishit it, and it was a low trajectory. It wouldn't be, he was hardly going for a goal from that far out. But
He didn't strike the ball cleanly all day. It was the most unlike Diarmaid Byrne's performance I've ever seen. I think he had missed his first 4, or maybe that was his 4th, and it wasn't going in, or it wasn't going over the bar either, until I think maybe there was a touch on it. But look, Ivor Quilligan will be so disappointed, because that was the lifeline for Limerick, and they needed that bit of luck, or they were gone. As you say, Rory, that everything was kind of going wrong for them. Their wide tally. But that, it points out just how key the goalkeeping position is again. Clare have really bolstered their panel in all the key areas that really let them down last year whenever a few injuries cropped up. But the one area they still have to fix is the goalkeeping position. You counter that with just how important that Nicky Quaid was for Limerick.
How many saves did he make?
I couldn't believe he didn't get man of the match, actually. His distribution too, the number of times he came out with the ball as well, retained possession for them, he's incredible. And there's a big area for Brian Loughlin to make a call on now, because Ivor is capable of the extraordinary. Some of his shot stopping is first class. Even he takes risks with the puck out. He done it a few times yesterday, going over the half back to somebody moving into space, and he got them right on numerous occasions. He only hit one that kind of went over David McInerney's head into the crowd at one stage. But two of those are goalkeeping errors, really, and that was the difference, because Clare were cruising up until that stage. But I think Brian will be able to rally the troops again. I think he'll say, look, I can't fault our effort. I know that we did fall apart, you know, for the last 15 minutes. We panicked. Like, Clare scored. Yeah, Clare, I think they were 9 up at that stage, but they conceded 2 goals in 40 seconds. So, you know, that does destabilize things. And I think Brian will be able to put that into context for the players and say, look, we just need to learn from that and make sure that the next time we concede a goal, somebody has to, you know, when is a ball up the field, when is it free?
But who is that, Neil, right? Because I was chatting to the lads when we were sitting watching this off air yesterday, and I was wondering when this everything was going to pot for Clare. Tony Kelly would have been that man before, and obviously big role when he came on yesterday, but they need somebody else. They need more leaders around the field, whether it's McInerney, whoever it is, Fitzgerald. Somebody needs to grab hold of this. It didn't seem yesterday like Clare had the players to do that.
I think they do. I think they just didn't do it. If I was Clare, I would be grouping my entire forward line in the middle, leaving David Fitzgerald on one side of the field and Peter Duggan on the other, and saying, we're going to hit one of those two lads. And everybody in the middle is going to get out either side and support. It looked like Clare didn't really have a plan for what to do if they were under pressure, but they will have the next day, I would think. And it's funny you should mention Tony Kelly coming on, because, geez, the roar was unbelievably loud whenever he just started warming up. It really seemed to unsettle Clare. The other Clare forwards, who had been in a great rhythm and a lovely flow, really kind of seemed to stop the movement that had been happening. We talked about it when we were watching the game. It became very static. It was almost as though the other Clare forwards were kind of saying, ah, Tony's on now, he'll take it from here. Yeah. And it didn't happen. It really didn't happen. So maybe in hindsight, it would be so hard to have Tony Kelly fit and able to play if you were the manager, not going to put him on. That's a tough thing to do, but things were moving well for Clare. I would say if Brian had that decision to make again, he would leave him where he was.
Geez, he'd be a brave man, Rory, if he did that, though. You know, like, you're talking, like, even when we were watching, I heard the roar and I thought, this is it. Clare are kicking for home. Tony Kelly's on. Life is good for them. Like, none of us could have foreseen what was coming after that.
No. And I suppose it's just the mark of true champions. They didn't panic. And I think that's key. Games now, as I think Rod Hegarty mentioned afterwards, it goes to 75, 80 minutes. They probably still felt they would have had time to try and claw something out of the contest. Made a couple of really key substitutions. Adam English, I thought, was outstanding. He's given John Kiely a right tarny selection issue now, because, he comes in, more or less changed the tone and the temperature in and around that middle sector. I thought he was brilliant. And Donegal Dalig again, you know, scored 1-1. Key contributions. Some of their big players taken off. So I think in a loads of ways, John Kiely will have woken up this morning really content. With Tipperary coming to town next week, and they didn't really play that well. There's a bit of dirty petrol maybe to flush out of the system on the back of a couple of weeks where they have had no matches as by being out of the league at semi-final stage. And I think to go to Ennis, to get 2 points on the board, set their stall out now, I think they're in prime position once again.
That being said, Neil, right? Rory is absolutely right. I think John Kiely will be delighted. Loads to improve on, you know, much bigger ceiling and all that. But this is 2 under par performances from Limerick in a row. If you take that Kilkenny defeat, which they were well off, and he described it as one of the worst he's ever seen. And I thought they were well off yesterday. If they'd have been beaten, I think the narrative today would be totally different. People would be saying, what's going on with Limerick? I think because they won, it might actually slightly paper over the cracks, because I'm not sure. Like, I think a lot of their key players didn't play well yesterday. I don't know what you think.
Oh, I agree firmly. I think John Kiely will be as disappointed with yesterday's performance as he would have been with the Kilkenny League semi-final performance. He was fairly animated along the sideline, alongside Kinnerk, and rightly so, because their performance, just the basics, you know, that they do really well. They bottle you up, they make you give them back possession with their tackling. They're so disciplined. There's so many runners off the shoulders. They only ever shoot whenever it's a 90%+ chance of scoring. They weren't doing any of that stuff. You know, Seamus Flanagan took a shot off the back foot right beside us. He was about 18 yards out, standing on the sideline over the shoulder with Adam Hogan hanging off him. You know, it was crazy stuff. I believe that Limerick know how much they got out of jail yesterday. And, you know, there was a capitulation, and that's the only way that they were getting back into that game, because they had no foothold, until Rory rightly says, until Adam English entered the fray. He actually came in wing back for the first few seconds, and Dermot Burns realised that he had found himself in wing back on Peter, and he says, "Get you off Mr Duggan and I'll go and take him." And he switched into midfield, but he played really deep. He played as a fourth half back, and in fairness to Limerick, they stuck to the process. What Limerick want to do is work the ball out short in tight confines, triangles, and then transition the ball in whenever they get to about the midfield line into that space. Because if they play deep, it brings their half forward line out and leaves that space in front of Aaron Galan. And they just kept doing what they do really well. Cian Lynch then started to get on ball in the last 15 minutes, and they worked the ball out beautifully, to be fair, and they popped in a lovely ball. And Limerick did struggle then, or sorry, Clare did struggle with Limerick's forwards for the last 15 minutes because they had gotten into their flow. But up until that stage, Clare were in their face at every opportunity and weren't allowing them to kind of do that. But you do have to give Limerick real credit. They didn't play well. They didn't play well really at all. I don't even think their last 15 minutes was anything like them on full power, but they just found a way to get there. They grounded out, they kept doing what they should do, and they got the scores, as fortuitous as they were, because they really were. Two of those goals, Clare will be very unhappy about.
Yeah, that's fair. And it leaves them in a position now, Rory, where next weekend they've effectively got a knockout game because of what happened in Walsh Park. I know you were there. I think these are two teams who are probably hurting for different ways. Clare will definitely feel they should have won the game. Cork probably never looked like winning that game yesterday, but everyone expected them to. So they're in a really difficult position as well. And now we've got a knockout game to look forward to in the park next weekend. It's going to be fireworks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, from Cork's perspective yesterday, I think really never got going. Never led. Got back level a couple of times, but never led once during the whole contest, which I think speaks volumes for Waterford. Waterford have taken a huge amount of stick. Davy Fitzgerald has taken a massive amount of stick. I think they answered an awful lot of those. That's their first victory in a round robin outside of beating Tipperary. I mean, they've only got two other wins in the entire round robin series since it started back in 2018. That's their third. So it's a massively significant fixture. Now, having said all that, there is a world of difference of playing Waterford and then playing a Waterford team with Jamie Barron, Tadhg De Burke and Conor Prunty in it. You're basically surgically inserting a spine into a side. And that's a very, very different proposition. When I saw that team, I went, this is going to be tight. There is absolutely not going to be more than a puck of a ball between these two teams at the end of this contest. And so approved, I think, ultimately. It was Jamie Barron goal at the start where he went storming straight up the middle. Again, a problem that's been afflicting Cork teams for years. But again, look, I don't really want to dwell too much on Cork. I think they got what they deserved yesterday, really, because they were beaten by the better team. The better team won on the day and they deserved their victory. I think they played like a team ravenous out of possession. They played like a team that was hurting a little bit from maybe some of the criticisms that they've taken and the disrespect, I think, that they may have felt has been shown their way. And yeah, they were just relentless. They were spirited. It was a real throwback to a kind of a Waterford team, the Waterford teams of the Ken McGraths and the Paul Flynn's eras, because they played with a slightly more direct brand of hurling as well. And obviously bottled it up when they needed to. There was that little bit of tic-tacs going on from Davey. I think it was encouraging to see they weren't trying to overthink things, which I think has maybe been a failing in the past. But look, you have to give them all credit here. They've set themselves up. They have a week off now.
Yeah.
Like, to go and pull out a big ambush and to really pour everything into it and to get the win. Now you're able to spend this week on recovery before you ramp things up to play Tipperary. So look, you know, they have absolutely thrown a cat amongst the pigeons there in terms of that result yesterday. And all the pressure, as I said, now was on the two teams that are beaten. It's really interesting. The two teams that are bottom of the group played one, not 0 points, and minus three scoring difference. I mean, you couldn't tee it up better for Páirc Cuíb next Sunday at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it just feels it's so early in the competition to feel like you've got a knockout game. We're watching all these
crazy,
meaningless football games for so long, Neil. And then here we're looking at a knockout game next weekend, which I don't think any of us could have foreseen that you'd be in this situation. And look, it may not happen. You know, somebody could lose both of these games and still get out. Crazier things have happened. But it just seems unlikely now that you're going to see Cork and Clare in the knockout stages, given the way that they've both played last weekend.
Oh, absolutely. No, that this is not good. I don't think either side will recover unless they win this weekend, Colin. And it's actually the same in the Joe McDonagh Westmeath play at Offaly. Yeah. And the winner of that has a chance of getting to the final. The loser is gone. So that's not good as well. But like Waterford, the exact same as Rory. Whenever I seen the team, I was like, okay, this is on. Waterford have their best 15, I think, pretty much available. Obviously, Austin Gleeson's not there this year. But look, I don't even know if it was an ambush, because Waterford's best 15 is certainly as good, if not stronger, than Cork's 15.
Well, it's a match for anyone. It's a match for anyone.
True. Yeah. And like as we said before, Cork are short of ball winners up front. You know, I know that's what they're trying to develop Alan Connolly into, and Seamus Harnady has been that soldier for such a long period of time now. But like, if any of the Limerick forwards get isolated with their man, that they can do serious damage. That's not the case with Cork, because they only have those two primary ball winners. And like, the question that I would be asking Cork is, who are they? You know, what are they about? We know the type of game that Kilkenny play, the type of game that Clare play, that Limerick play. They know what they're about, and exactly, Limerick just stuck to who they were and eventually paid dividends for it. I don't know how Cork are going to play next weekend. Will it be different from what it was yesterday? And I don't know what the philosophy is there. I probably don't know enough about Pat Ryan to understand his philosophy. It looks like the lads in the field aren't terribly sure, because it changes. They have a big panel. They do change that quite regularly. They haven't brought through as many of those really talented underage players who I've been looking forward to seeing over the last number of years. It's still a lot of the same clientele whenever it rolls around the championship every year, in the forward line and in the back line, because they haven't sorted out three yet either. So like, Cork really need to decide who they are and what they're, you know, how they're going to defend Páirc Cuíb next weekend, because it is massive. And if they don't win, I believe they're out of the Munster Championship.
Can they beat Clare, Rory?
I think they can. But I think they'll be going in as underdogs.
They will too. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And rightly so. I mean, I think Cork's record against Clare of late in a championship context is atrocious, by the way. I don't know when the last time Cork beat Clare in the championship, but I think you could be going back. I should have checked that before coming on. Apologies, but I think you're going back 5 or 6 years at this stage. So their record against Clare is poor. They're searching for a little bit of identity, as Neil said. I think that's a very fair comment. Yeah, like, can they win? They can, because there's a mercurial nature in them that they could put together a 20-25 minute streak there where they become almost so difficult to live with. They're still capable of that streakiness, like that. They're like a golfer when the putter goes hot, you know. And but are they going to win championships? Are they going to see it through to win a major? I'm not entirely sure. Yeah. They're lacking a few leaders still, maybe, I think, in and around. Like Declan Dalton, I think, was a big blow in terms of puck outs. I think he was absolutely... But you can't... I'm not entirely... Yeah, I think Peter's just mentioned there, the 2018 final in Semple Stadium is the last time Cork have beaten Clare in Munster. That's 6 years. That's extraordinary now. So like they'll have their work cut out. The balance of the team just seems slightly off. I can understand what he's trying to do with Conor Lehan. I can understand what he's trying to do with, obviously, he's got Patrick Horgan and Seamus Harnady still in there battling away. Look, I don't know. I think, can he throw all that out in 7 days before you go in to take on the league champions and many people's favourites for putting it up to Clare. I'm not entirely sure you can do that either. So he's in quite the pickle.
Yeah.
But they've got, they haven't got any time to be feeling sorry for themselves. So they just need to get on with it.
Yeah, knockout hurling. Who knows? Yeah. Last question on Waterford then, Neil. How much do you rate their chances after having a win in the bag now of getting out of Munster? Do you think, because I know just listening to Davy Fitz, he was thinking, look, we've got a week off. We can sit tight. We can see what happens. They'll be facing a Tipperary team who we don't know what kind of position they're going to be coming into the game. Yeah. Do you give Waterford a shout now of getting out?
I do. And to be totally honest, pre-Sunday, I absolutely did not. Because their league showing was super and we have nothing to go on. Now they were missing key personnel and they do have them back now. And they also, there will be sore bodies in Waterford today. So it's the first introduction to Championship hurling and any hurling this year for some of them and some of their main players. So their schedule has worked really nicely for them. In first, get that win on the board, then a week to recover. I think they can beat Tip. I don't think they'll be strong enough for Clare. I don't think they'll be strong enough for Limerick. I think they can get to 4 points, and 4 points will probably get you into third spot.
Yeah.
So I do give them a shout, very much so. And look, a lot of it was based on hard work, heart, and how much they cared about Waterford, their pride for the county, and especially at home and having games back in Walsh Park again after that hiatus was over. And like, they wanted to show the Waterford public, you know, about how much it meant to them. I would say they wanted to back Davy as well and show, you know, that they're all in this together. And there's only one way to do that, and that's by getting the overalls on and going to work. And they just beat Cork in that section all day long.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. It was a throwback to the good old days of Waterford, and it was
a special mention for Tiger Burke after a year.
And do you know what? I heard Davy Fitz saying, even in training games, he wasn't able to play more than 55 minutes. So that was the first 70 minutes he'd had in a year, you know. Yeah. And to see that he had not lost a yard of pace, a yard of his touch, it was just watching Tiger Burke in full flight for hurling fans is just joy. Yeah. So thrilled to see him back. And I'm sure he'll be glad of the extra week off after that as well. Exactly. Let's finish off on Leinster then, Neil, because I mean, Dublin Wexford was absolutely wild. I think Wexford fans even more so than Clare fans. I know Clare ended up losing the game, but for Wexford, I think they might feel like that nearly felt like a loss yesterday because that's a game that they should have won. But drawing to them might just feel like a complete sucker punch.
It absolutely will. Yeah. And because they entered just a few more of their better known players who they had done without in the league. You know, Keith Rossiter had pulled off a bit of a masterclass in the league without so many of his top personnel, but that will feel like a defeat, you know, especially because the Late Late Show is supposed to be in Dublin on a Friday night, not on Championship Sunday, but the 73rd and 75th minute goals, you know, that's shows the heart that Dublin were playing with, in fairness to them. But I think Wexford felt through their league campaign, because of the talent that they'd unearthed, because of the bond that's clearly there with Keith Rossiter and the players, I think Wexford felt that we've climbed into the top echelon now of hurling teams, and we're right there with Clare and with Wexford, with Clare and with Kilkenny and Limerick, and that's where we want to stay. And they were going out to send a message that we're done with Dublin and Antrim and whoever else. And they will be picking themselves up off the floor this morning because of the nature, obviously, of Dublin's comeback and because of the travel that they believe that they had been on. And I think they would have a big, big sights on a Leinster final this year, hoping to catch, you know, Galway or Kilkenny somewhere along the way. Could still happen, but they will be unbelievably disappointed this morning.
Look, and you probably wouldn't write Wexford off from doing that, Rory. That's the nature of just this team, the way they have been over the last number of years. But even so, during the league, they love a good draw in Wexford. They just, you know, don't know how they manage to keep doing it.
It will feel like a defeat. Having said that, they had the game won. They were the better side. Now, I only saw the highlights that you guys put out last night, but I was kind of just keeping track of it. Like, it looked to me like they were the front runners And they just got caught with two sucker punches at the end. So I, again, like, I wouldn't be, if I was Keith Rossiter, and I'm sure he doesn't need me to be telling him what to be doing, but I don't think they need to be panicking all that much. Like, they are capable. I think they have to go to Salt Hill to play Galway. That'd be sticky enough. But Kilkenny never hold any fears for them. So you wouldn't put it past them pulling off a result in one or either of those fixtures. I think the big thing for me, though, was to see a bit of spirit and a bit of pride and a bit of heart and a bit of personality back in Dublin hurling. To get a draw like that when you're on the flat of your back and to fight and to pull a point out of a very, very unlikely situation, I think speaks volumes to their character. I think it's the kind of result that sometimes can really launch a team and be a platform for them to go on and to really compete. And I think for Micheál Donoghue and a lot of those Dublin hurlers who have been the subject of a lot of criticism as well, no different to the Waterford hurlers, I think, look, if you're a serious inter-county team, and I think that's what they would aspire to be, a result like yesterday will be massive for their development. And, you know, look, you'd have to give them a lot of credit.
Yeah, there was a huge amount of kids from our club went down to the game, Neil, and just listening to the young fellas afterwards talking about, I got his signature and his signature. Yeah, you know, for Dublin hurling players to feel that way, to have had a massive win like that, Rory's right, the boost it will give. Yes, the football has always been the more attractive quality, I think, but if they could feel that they're in with a real fighting chance of getting into the knockout stages, the buzz around Dublin hurling could reignite with just one more result.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the hurling public would love to see it because, you know, I think Dublin were nearly everybody's second favourite hurling team whenever Dalo was looking after them because of the way they played. With total abandon, there was personalities, there was characters there in the team. And obviously Danny rattled the battle at the back of the net yesterday again. He's still hanging in there. And I think that, you know, Dublin in Parnell Park are a proposition for anyone. They don't tend to travel just as well. So that's why getting that draw in Wexford Park will be massive for them. And it was, you know, it was some comeback. Quite actually leashed on the exact same against Offaly, a real Houdini act later on there from Paddy Purcell. But look, those small things can ignite something if they're channeled, you know, really, really well. And no better man than Micheál Donoghue to take what they've done yesterday and bring it through to the next game, because he has such experience with bringing a group. You know, like Galway, had they not have won that, All-Ireland would have been known as an underachieving outfit. And, you know, he brought them through. So what does success look like for Dublin? It's 100% being that third team in Leinster. And now they've given them a chance to do exactly that.
Yeah. Fun times ahead. We don't have time to get into the other games, but I'm sure for Antrim and Carlow, they'll feel that maybe they didn't have their best hurling outings at the weekend. But look, I think that battle for third is probably the most intriguing one, really, Neil. I know you'd like to feel that Antrim are in it, but at the moment, Dublin, Wexford, where's your money?
I think it's still in Wexford, because Wexford are a more potent attacking force than Dublin. They have an unbelievable forward line when everyone's fit. So I think Wexford will put up bigger scores as they move through the championship. I think they also have a better chance of getting, you know, a result, maybe another draw against Galway or against Kilkenny. So I think the final game for Wexford in the championship is away to Kilkenny, so in Nolan Park, and they love that fixture. So who knows what will happen? But I think Wexford are, I think they're a better side than Dublin actually, and I think that they will be really quite quietly confident that they can do something against Galway or Kilkenny and try and reach that Leinster final. Still, I think that will still remain their aim at the moment.
Fun times ahead. We look forward to it, Neil. Thanks a million for being with us.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses.
All right, Enda McGinley is with us now to chat football. The busiest man in show business. Celtic Park on Saturday, Sunday game last night, and here you are today. I tell you, you have a lot to... flat to the mat. But look, what a weekend of football. You know, we're chatting about hurling there and saying, look, it really came to life. But it does feel like we had a cracking weekend of football as well. It's just a pity there were so many of them to get our heads around.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was a busy weekend, all right. I'm sitting here, I've got this strange document, divorce papers here, just after apparently saying. No, serious weekend of football. Like, and again, contrast that to the previous week, and we were all doom and gloom, and football people, we do doom and gloom well. Like, we really do deride our game at least 95% of the time, and every now and then we'll admit that something was reasonable. There was, what, five big games from the weekend, and every one of them had much to say for themselves. Like, really, really interesting, good performances, tactically interesting, great pieces of skill. The weather definitely helps, I would have to say. Just even watching the games in sunshine was great to see. So, no, absolutely, absolutely brilliant, and we do need to appreciate, because I guarantee, as much as the clouds are back today, that in 2-3 weeks' time, we will be talking about some weekend saying, the Football Championship needed that. Football Championship needed it. It's sort of, we need a big game. We needed that big game, because nothing really has happened to date. We're very quick to forget about decent games, and this weekend was full.
Yeah, it was. And none more so than that one in Celtic Park. And I think, Rory, your owl lobbed the goalie thing, came back to bite you. You've been calling this for a long time. I was thinking of you on Saturday.
29th of January. 29th of January. And I think Enda was on with us, you and I and Eamon, when he got caught against Kerry on the very first weekend of the league. And I think the Donegal goalkeeper on that same weekend was caught by Chris Oak-Jones as well. And I brought it up as a subject matter because I think it's the daftest thing that I've ever... I just don't understand. I don't have a problem per se. I don't have a problem, let's say, saying to the goalkeeper, you can drift out as far as the 20, right? And you can be an overlap. But I don't want to see too much further than that. I mean, I was looking on Saturday, right? So he was out as a kick-out option. You've Brendan Rodgers and Connor Glass as your midfield pairing. What the hell is Oran Lynch going to do that's better than what Brendan Rodgers and Connor Glass can give you? Daft. And I think they need to dispense with it fairly sharpish, because I think they did a huge amount of damage to their credibility and their All-Ireland ambitions. This was a slightly humiliating defeat. Like, they completely had their pants pulled down here. And I don't know. It was just the oddest thing I've ever seen in a football field. Persist with it. Like, after you got caught twice, let's do it again.
Yeah. That was the bit that surprised me. Like, I forgot to say it last night. But if you look at the narrative of a couple of the other games from the weekend where the favourites were struggling and the underdogs were doing well, in the Sligo Galway game and the Kerry Cork game, the standard storyline paid out, where gradually the underdog, the plucky underdog, runs out of steam, and the big boys gradually get going, wheel them in, and manage to get over the finish line at the end. Even, you could argue, thrown Cavan to a lesser extent as well. That game took on a wee bit of his life of its own. But having been at the game and seeing the Donegal players, seeing the effort that they'd put in, with about 15 minutes left in that game, there's 4 or 5 points game in it. For the first time, you could hear the Derry crowd, which were a bit shell-shocked, and you're thinking, okay, just keep steadily kicking over 1 or 2 points, because even if you only have that down to 2 points heading into injury time, that's still fine if you've got the momentum and you're the team with the legs coming. They would have got those scores, I would have no doubt at all. And yet, and so, just don't concede any more goals. You've risked it, which I thought was a surprise at the start, because for me, looking in from the outside, and I put it in my article on the preview of the game, I felt the pattern kick out was the one sort of definite weapon Donegal have, and they've loved always this flick on in midfield. So Derry do a high press, Patton has a long kick out. Donegal don't want to commit too many players up the pitch, because that would open them up to Derry's counter-attacking game. So I was thinking, okay, they're going to hold fairly tight and launch Patton missiles and hope to get enough out of that. And that's what they've done. But Derry still had got themselves a bit of a lifeline, 4 or 5 points down, 15 minutes maybe or so on the clock, Patton off. Just keep it safe. But no, we gambled in the first half. It didn't work. We'll keep on gambling, because and it just, you said about Rodgers and Glass, like we highlighted last night in the show, for the kick out that Oran Lynch went up and competed against Jason McGee, the two midfielders weren't even there. Like, it just, Yeah, look, it was a really
I wonder, right? This particular tactic is a hangover from a previous management regime. And I just wonder, would Mickey be of the view? Look, I'll persist with this because this is something that you guys seem to be comfortable with, and there might be a benefit or there might be some sort of dividend to be harvested here. But if this goes belly up, then we're doing it my way. And was Saturday night nearly the perfect example for him now to go into training on Tuesday? Look, lads, we did a chair away now and we persisted with this. It was silly. We're now going to go back to a slightly more conservative approach and you stay in your bloody goal.
That would stand up only when he was over Louth. He employed.
He did the same thing. Okay, fair enough. Where's that argument
caught,
gone?
And got caught a number of times. Right, okay. No, I think it is a tactic that they feel has benefit with. And as I said last night, I don't think it's for the trash bin, but I think the risk v benefit calculation and the mitigation
needs to be reassessed.
The plan B, whenever plan A hasn't worked out, the plan B operation will be much slicker than what it was against Donegal. But look, it wasn't just the position of the goal. It was a general, the players were reacting so slow and in second gear compared to Donegal's reaction on break balls. And I think that's just a hangover from a phenomenal league campaign, phenomenal league final. I think a small element of complacency against a good team, well set up. And look, Donegal's goals came at just the perfect time. You know, just each one of them came absolutely perfect to keep rocking Derry back in the heels. Like Oran Lynch should have got that one that went in over his head in towards the Brandywell end where he had it in his hand, then came down, hit off his knee. Even if that hadn't went in, I think Derry could have built up enough momentum. So Mickey Hart's long enough about, he will try to turn that. He can't turn it into anything other than a bad loss, but he'll certainly try and paint it. Look, it is not a terminal defeat. And I don't think it is.
One other key thing, right? They're going to get a break, which in this turnaround, you know, you're looking at Tyrone Cavan there yesterday. The wheel is just going to keep turning. And for Ulster, if you're a team that has to go through this Ulster Championship, win, and then go straight into the knockout series, I'm not saying this is by design. I'm certainly not saying that this is what Mickey Hart wanted. But actually, it might be a blessing in disguise for that Derry team who've been on the road all the way through the league, flat to the mat. The teams, the Glen lads coming off, the Club All-Ireland as well. I actually think a break might be just what they need here.
Yeah, no, absolutely massive. And the biggest benefit is they have had a critical flaw pointed out in really quite an embarrassing way, but they've pointed out in a way that they will learn. There's no way they're going to, well, you would think there's no way they're going to get caught again. Dublin done use that tactic. Mind Jack McCaffrey's goal where they clutched and hit 2-3 long kickouts to the one side of the Hogan Stand in the Ireland final. First couple didn't work out. They persisted because they had it as a nail-down tactic. The flick-on happened. Jack McCaffrey raced up the pitch for a goal. I presume it was against Mayo, maybe in one of the finals. So Dublin would have been aced to exploit that come later on in the year. But that area is gone. So that's a benefit from Derry, but it's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah. But look, I think everybody can vouch that Derry are still going to be All-Ireland contenders. They're still going to be in the shout no matter what happened. But people definitely did not like that. One other thing that people did not like at the weekend, Rory, was, look, you've been a producer on the Sunday game for long enough. You've seen when people try to do different things. Yesterday, Mayo Roscommon was live on the telly at 4 o'clock. I think everybody on the team thought, maybe let's try to do something different with it. Let's look at a story of the day option instead of showing the highlights. It is fair to say people did not love it. And people just want to watch the games. And look, maybe we got it wrong. But Mayo Roscommon was not the most exciting game of the weekend. That is for sure. But I think sometimes when you get it wrong, you get it wrong.
Yeah, the Sunday game audience is meat and two veg, Jackie. It really is. Like, I remember when I first started off in that role, I tried something similar. And I could tell you without any fear of contradiction, I said, well, I'm never doing that ever again.
And you know, the funniest thing is, myself, I
thought it was a beautiful, by the way, I watched it last night and I thought it was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Myself and Ender were sitting in the studio and we were like, oh, this is lovely. It's totally different or whatever. And then really I went home and realized, people hate that.
Yeah, whoever cut it did a fantastic job. I thought it was trying to come at it with, bring a sort of a different perspective, tell the story via the main protagonists, get some isolated camera angles in there, tart it up with some super slow bit of music. I thought it was a really, like, considering as a tight enough turnaround, that match would have was true in at 4 o'clock. You got to get that ready by whatever time, 9, 10 o'clock at night. There's a lot of work in that. And I really enjoyed it, but I'm a telly person. So yeah. I'm not a viewer, and I can understand why people wouldn't have liked it, but look, it's just, you take these lessons and you just have to move on, I suppose.
That's it. Meat and two veg. Well, let's stick to the knitting then and on the games. I think, what's the overall lesson out of the weekend then? And, you know, because I think there's a few things that people probably just need tightening up. One is the goalkeeper situation. The other that had people vexed, I think, is probably the black cards. You know, we were highlighting this again last night. Just the consistency across the games and how it's being refereed. I think as the series goes on, these are the kind of things that you feel like are going to start feeling like flaws in the system with every week that progresses in the championship. They feel like they're the things that over the last, the course of a couple of weeks, the things that we are talking about.
Yeah, you mentioned it last night, the consistency, like that's what winds me up, both as a past player and as a coach or a manager now. And seeing the efforts that the players go in and the pressure that's on them and how much is riding on these games for these groups. And then suddenly, without really any notice to fans, players or anybody, some referees or a group of referees decide, okay, well, we're going to clamp down on this. And so they issue a black card and they say, yeah, there's a technicality in the rule book and we've decided we're going to clamp down on that. Now, having not clamped down on it at all during any other game, and we'll see it maybe once or twice, if you went through those games yesterday, even Paddy Lynch twice after that incident pulled down thrown players right in front of him and no sending off. If it was for provocation, you look across the games this weekend and the amount of stuff, even wind the clock back to Owen Merchant on David Clifford. Mind, David Clifford was having the off day in the National League. Every time he missed, Owen Merchant was at him congratulating him for his miss. But suddenly it's down. Apparently, now, one of the journalists that was at the match, his report of the game today, Cathal Keane, he was mentioning that Paddy Lynch had thrown Rory Canavan to the ground just before, and then him and Hampshire got into an altercation. So, but suddenly then, black card brandished, and it's, well, no, it's all fair and good because it's in the rule book. It is the lack of consistency on it is massive. And for me, the black card is such a punishment now for these minor things. There was no need for a black card there yesterday at all in my book. I thought it was very, very harsh, had a huge bearing on the game. And for what? Now, in fairness to David Goldrick, he was going on his linesman's opinion, so he has to act according to whatever he's heard. But I just would have issues. The black card for me came in as a massive knee-jerk reaction. It's for a long time, it has been much easier to get a rule into the GA rule book than it is to get it out. We can look at the forward mark. We can look at the black card. It comes in as a knee-jerk reaction, and then it's not quite right. So then we start layering up. We start trying to define it a wee bit more, or we layer it on then as a sin bin rather than off for the game, and we try to adjust and adjust and adjust to make up for maybe the original rule not being fully thought through at the time, in my opinion, or not being fully necessary. If we tightened up what yellow cards were given for, would we really need a black card at all, or bring in, I know the trial that before sin bin for yellow card, but there's some seriously dangerous hits are getting yellow cards now, which is a minor punishment. And then some absolutely daft, wee silly things interpreted as cynical, given a black card, and then other really blatant cynical things not getting a card because they're not technically in the rule book. Mm-hmm. It is a bit of a mess. It has been for a while. And hopefully it'll be all tidied up.
Like, one of the things, Jackie, which was very interesting, was Donegal didn't know injury rule where you have to leave the field of play depending on the interpretation of the referee. And obviously it had an impact on Sean Paton being escorted to the halfway line because that's where you have to re-enter. We spoke about this on the pod back in February, I think, around early February, you and I and Kieran Whelan, because we'd seen it in action at a club game and the confusion that it causes. So that's definitely another issue that I think could potentially cause some controversy down the line, because ultimately you're leaving it to the interpretation of the referee on whether or not the injury is serious or not. Because we saw it in Killarney, for instance, Cork versus Kerry, two very serious, well, I don't know whether they were serious or not. There was an injury to Joe O'Connor. He got up and he just carried on after being treated for maybe two or three minutes. And then I think Sean Meehan, straight off the throw-in, got a right bang in the head from his own player, had to be treated, but didn't have to go off either because the referee deemed, oh, that was a serious one. That was a serious one. So you can stay on the field. But no, you're play acting here now to run the clock down. So you have to leave.
Yeah.
That to me is, I don't know.
Yeah, I think they've slightly, and again, it could well be revised. I think the intention is good in terms of there is a lot of.
Yeah. So you're trying to cut down on time wasting and
totally.
My biggest.
They're all brought in for the right reasons.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. My biggest bugbear is the head injury one. I haven't been a victim of more than one or two concussions in the past, and neck injuries and whatnot. For me, and it's in the rule book anyway, that you're allowed 10 minutes to properly assess a head injury, and it's acknowledged that a head injury is a progressive type thing that you can't judge in the seconds there in the pitch, that it actually takes a wee while for it to manifest itself, whether it's a minor one, he's okay, or whether no, something more serious when you take him off. So there's that 10-minute thing. Rugby obviously has it. And the head injury is the classic one you hear called all the time. Oh, head injury ref, because they know it's the one thing the ref has to stop the game for. Mm-hmm. So, and for me, the easiest thing for me would have been, okay, bring in a mandatory 10-minute off for a head injury, so that if there is a knock, you're off. If there's any, if physio medical staff come on and they look at the person at all as if they've a head injury, there's a head injury, shout, the ref can say, oh, God, here, absolutely, we'll stop this game. You take it to the sideline, we'll see you in 10 minutes. You would see a huge decrease in those head injury shouts. Roy's absolutely right. The calling of then, if they're bringing it in then for injuries, so injuries, non-serious injuries that you have to go off the pitch, just bring it in for all injuries. Like, because then you're not making a judgment call, because it's a dodgy, dodgy thing bringing in a judgment call as to what's a serious injury or not a serious injury and putting somebody off the pitch. If it's a policy, and soccer has it, if it's a policy that your medical staff have to come on the pitch to see you, well, then you go off the pitch and come back on again. There you go. And you're not, the referee isn't in a position to have to judge or not judge. If you're down and you need medical personnel on, then you go off and you come back on at the halfway line, next break and play. That makes it simpler, but again, muddy in the water. If it's a serious injury, you can stay on, get treated and play on. That's nearly the opposite of what it should be. If it's a serious injury, get treated, yes, take yourself off, and then when you're ready, come back on.
Yeah. Who'd be a referee, lads? All the jobs that we are giving them, it just seems so difficult to consistently ask them to do all these jobs. Okay, let's finish off big picture then, Rory, because I think Enda made this point last night when you're looking at the teams. Kerry looked quite, you know, laboured. Mayo took a while to get going. You know, I think for a lot of these teams, maybe the lessons are in how they approached last year versus what they approached this year. Because I don't know if we've seen anybody at absolute full tilt yet. I think Donegal really surprised a lot of people with the way that they went at the game at the weekend and how brilliant they were. But it does seem for a lot more of the teams, maybe they're just timing their runs a little bit better this year, and we should be just judging them over the course of the next few weeks as opposed to what we saw this weekend.
Mm. Well, if Galway are timing their run, they're doing it. they're doing a funny job of it.
They've been timing it for quite a while now. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that could have easily have been the result.
That is the one, by the way.
It was very cruel on them, really, in a way, because they were... No, I didn't see this. I don't know if it was available to watch anywhere, so I'm not going to comment on how the game played out in terms of who should have won or who shouldn't. But when you get caught for a sucker punch goal at the very end, you would imagine, like, you know, it's the difference from Sligo. Sligo were in the Sam Maguire last year, and they had I thought they acquitted themselves quite well. They only took one real bad shellacking. I think Tony McAtee's done an unbelievably good job there. They've improved year on year. They've gone from 4-3, solid 3 team, they're making good progress on underage level. They were in the All-Ireland under 20 final last year and were unlucky maybe not to win that. And yeah, I think they deserve a big shout out. Now they head off to the Tailteann Cup. I think they should just go and win it. Try and go and win the Tailteann Cup. I think it's definitely something that should be within their radar. But in terms of time and runs, I think all the big guns, look, I suppose from a Derry perspective, they now can go the sort of Mayo route and maybe just ease off. I'd imagine Mickey probably just say, look, everyone take the week off.
Take time off. Yeah.
Yeah. Just take a week off. Let's all get away from each other for at least a week, maybe even 10 days, and we'll reconvene. And that'll give us 2.5 weeks minimum to start prepping for the round robin, which obviously you won't know where you're going or who you're playing on for another couple of weeks. Well, certainly after the provincial finals, which I think are the weekend after the next. So I think from that point of view, yeah, Mayo look to have kind of, you know, timed their run a little bit better in terms of going through Connacht. I thought they'd only played really in fits and starts yesterday. Kerry will be reasonably happy. I think Cork are back to a stage where they used to be years ago, Jackie, which always annoyed all the rest of us. I think Cork are back to, which is improvement from a Cork perspective, but we're back up to now giving Kerry a test.
Before I thought they played well. I actually think for them going into the round robin, they'll feel we're probably where we thought we were going to be, because maybe they would have loved to believe that they'd win the game. But I think a lot of people still feel they're in the same position they thought they'd be, and they gave Kerry a good game.
Yeah, and I was very encouraged by what I saw. I just think they couldn't sustain. Kerry obviously made a couple of tactical tweaks in the midst of all of that. Cork were kicking. Cork kicked the ball in nice and early and a lot. They put foot to ball and they looked to try and get the inside line going with very direct kicking. Problem for them, I suppose, was that sort of pace. Kerry obviously made a quick adjustment, shut down that middle channel, and then you were having to run the ball a lot more and they couldn't really sustain it. And obviously Kerry had better shooters from distance, but I think they'll take a good bit from it. They're definitely making incremental improvements as well. I think the round robin is going to be fascinating. Like, it's going to be very interesting. Now we'll say, just for example, where Derry end up.
That's what
Derry,
I was thinking. Wait, you know, if you're a provincial winner and you get Derry in your group, you'll be saying, oh,
that's
God.
It. I could banker Derry end up in the same group as Dublin.
Yeah.
Banker. No, they'll both qualify, I would imagine, because as we said, three come out of the groups, but you know, look, it'll make things interesting. No, just the fact that they're in there now as a non-seed one or two.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing people will take from this weekend, just how people like Derry go away and use this period. But also for the likes of a Kerry, I still think, Enda, there's probably a few things that'll niggle away at the likes of Jack O'Connor. Definitely getting Jason Foley back into the mix as quick as possible back there. I think there's a few other things that maybe they might just feel we need to settle down over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I suppose it's still the biggest doubt is still around their midfield. Obviously, Foley's importance to the defence has been highlighted sort of once again. And for anybody, whether they're timing it or not timing it, you're still worried until you actually start to see an actual form line, because until that form line's there, and the likes of David Clifford's performance yesterday, who, let's face it, is so critical to Kerry. No forward intends to go out to miss. Like, David Clifford hasn't played for that for 2.5 years. And I'm sure during that time, he was at times a bit under the weather or not feeling great or whatever. And yet just accuracy and everything else. So players can go through dips. And that's worrying whenever everything's going to be done and dusted in the next 2 months. So he'll want those form lines to change around pretty sharpish. He's obviously got the Munster final now with Clare. Kerry, a wee bit similar to Dublin because of the nature of their provincial championship, you would have thought that gives them enough sort of break to then really push hard in the group stage. I do think that that's where they're at the minute. I think Dublin are the one team that's a wee bit different.
Yeah.
They've such a strong second string. Like, Dublin at the end of the day rested all of their big stars for pretty much all of the National League. So in a way, that's them timing it. It's just that their second string is so bloody good that it doesn't really matter. Everybody else, the Ulster teams obviously are going hammer and tong because you just have to up here. But that to me is the biggest thing, just where these teams are at. And we don't simply know. I think the group stage, which last year, if you remember, it sort of felt a bit of a damp thing going into the group stage, and it wasn't until the last round of it that it started to get going. I think given the way all these teams are playing, I think there will be an air of expectation that when we get to the group stage, right now we really start to see, and you'll start to see teams, because that gives them their three games to really hit form for the quarterfinal stage. So I think the group stage could well be where it's at this year. The games have been great at the minute. And for the Football Review Committee, how do you start trying to change a game that gives up so much this weekend? You know, I think their pass just gets even. When even Cork is kicking the ball and Donegal are kicking the ball and doing their fast transitions, it's a difficult game to get your head around at the minute. But
there's life in the old dog yet at the old provincial championships. I mean, if you look at across the board, you know, last minute heroics in Markovic Park, where Galway get out by the narrowest of margins, two Division One teams in front of a big crowd in the Hyde between Mayo and Roscommon. An incredible game in Breffni Park, by the way. Absolutely. Yeah. An unbelievable drama and an incredible game of football, totally swept under by the glut of fixtures that we have to deal with. But look, that's another day's story. You had, obviously, Cork and Kerry. There was 20,000 in Fitzgerald Stadium, played a really top-class encounter. Derry Donegal, full house in Celtic Park on Saturday night. You know, look, the provincial councils will be saying, well, what are you all talking about, lads?
If you give it a bit of breathing space, maybe change the price and structure and tickets, you would have had unbelievable atmospheres and stuff yesterday. Like when I was in Celtic Park on Saturday evening, you were sitting there and I actually said to somebody that was up with me, like I'm in the camp that thinks the provincial championships just don't fit within the current thing. And if we're very congested, it just looks as if we're sticking with tradition for the sake of it, even though I know how much of a loss also championship would be. But when you're sitting at an occasion like that, you realise if we do away with them or move them, you never have days like this. And those are special, special days for our sport to have and for everybody to enjoy and talk about. That's going to be a massive, but we just need to be careful we are not damming it through death by a thousand cuts, given Donegal and thrown 1 week now and everybody else 1 week to get their head around that last match and start building up to what should be a hugely appetizing fixture this weekend.
And that's a really interesting point, because like I watched after you said last night on the show that it was an awesome game of football. So I said, they had it recorded from BBC. So I sat down and watched it quite late. Now it was a brilliant game. But the one thing that was very apparent in that was there was 100 minutes of championship football played in high heat. And they have they have a day less. They have a day less than Donegal to go out and play Donegal in 7 days' time.
You could see Doher out in the pitch afterwards, just no, standing around, autographs, no, nothing like that.
Get off.
Hour counts almost.
Yeah.
Well, every hour counted if you were a sports fan this weekend, because trying to watch every game, it was just like credit to you, Inda, because it is not easy, honest to God, trying to keep
that's
up.
That's why I liked that wee Mayo thing last night, because I'd watched the match already. Then you're back and forward and through it, and you're looking, right, minute there, what time was that? Okay, that minute there. And then, you know, the show's going on, and then when the matches are going, you're sort of watching your highlights and saying, okay, that play, okay, you've got that there. And it was, I sort of glanced around and then noticed, what's that now? That's not highlights. So, they're playing this new thing. All right. Okay. Fair enough. Something different.
Exactly.
Oh, the joy of it all. Lads, we'll have to leave it there. But thoroughly entertaining weekend. Rory, you're absolutely right. Provincial Championship is alive and well. Change nothing. Yeah. I'm only messing. All right, lads. We'll be back on Thursday to look ahead to another weekend. Don't forget to like and follow wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll talk to you soon.
There's the whistle. It's over. It's a-